Chuck Swindoll. You guys know Chuck Swindoll? I know most Christians do if they listen to the to Christian radio. He's a pastor of a church in Texas. He wrote a book back in 1987. It was called Living Above the Level of Mediocrity. I believe it's probably either his best or second best book he's ever written. If you want to get a copy, they have it at Ollie's in Chillicothe right now for $3.99. I know that because I just saw it the other day. Almost bought me a second copy. It is called Living... What's that? Yeah, I was thinking of you guys. Yeah. The book, again, is called Living Above the Level of Mediocrity. In that book, Chuck says, you will not stand alone when outnumbered, or stand tall when tested, or stand firm when discouraged if your focus remains on the odds. And then he goes on to say something that has helped me several times through the years. And he said, our eyes are always focused on one of four places at all times. On our circumstances, on others, on ourself, or on the Lord. And if they are focused on any one of the first three and not on the Lord, we will drift away and ultimately fail. I've leaned back on that saying many times over the years. It's got me through some hard times because I do get focused on things other than the Lord. Folks, we would do ourselves a great service to remember that saying when our circumstances leave us feeling discouraged and hopeless. It would do us a great service to remember that saying when we feel bothered or intimidated by other people. It would do us a great service to remember that when we begin to feel that we are a nobody or we're inadequate or insufficient. There's a man in the Old Testament. He had focused on those first three things, his circumstances, the other people, and himself. And then God stepped in and he began to turn the man's eyes upon him. This man's story is going to be found in the book of Judges. It's in chapters 6 through 8, so let's turn there. But while you're turning there, let me ask you, what man are we talking about? Yes. Starts with a G, Gideon, that's right, yes, Gideon. Thank you. Book of Judges, chapter 6 through 8. Are we there? All right. If Terry's there, everybody's there. Throw this Old Testament book in there, I thought I'd get him. I see. You got that letter I mailed you Wednesday that gave you a forewarning. The man we're going to be looking at this morning is none other than a man named Gideon. Gideon was a grain farmer. Okay, he did not hold any special position in any organizations. He didn't hold any high-ranking political office or position. There wasn't anything prestigious or impressive about Gideon. At least not until he took his eyes off his circumstances, the other people, and himself. Once he put his eyes on God, things changed so dramatically for Gideon that the Jewish people wanted to make him their ruler. Gideon went from being a nobody to becoming a somebody. As a matter of fact, Gideon's name is recorded in Hebrews chapter 11 in the Hall of Faith. But it's only his name. It tells us nothing about him. So that's why we're going to the book of Judges. Let's begin with verse 1 of... where are we at again? No, we're not in Gideon. We're in Judges, Deb. Okay. Judges chapter 6. Yeah. One in every crowd. Okay. That's why everybody's over here today. They thought if I stay away from Terry, they won't pick on me. All right, Judges chapter 6, verse 1. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years God gave them into the hands of the Midianites. At this time in Israel's history, folks, if you're familiar with the book of Judges, the Israelites had reached a point where they just did whatever they wanted to do, and they served whatever God they wanted to serve. They worshiped whichever God they wanted to worship. In other words, they was a lot like America today. And so God arranged for them to be taken over by one of their enemies that is called the Midianites. As you read down through there, you would see that the Midianites were really nothing more than a bunch of, just a country full of ruthless bullies. For example, if the Jewish people raised crops, the Midianites would come along and take the crops for themselves or just simply destroy them. If the Jews had livestock, the Midianites would come along and either take the livestock for themselves or kill off the animals. It says there in verse 2 that the Midianites were so oppressive and cruel that the Jewish people would abandon their homes at times and head up into the mountains and live in caves. It says in verse 6 that after 7 years into their impoverished conditions, the Jewish people cried out to the Lord for help. And God responded by going to have a talk with a man named Gideon. Verse 11. It says the angel of the Lord. Who is the angel of the Lord? Anybody? The angel of the Lord is actually Jesus. It's called a theophany. It was when Jesus appeared in the human flesh in the Old Testament. So when you see the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament, that's a reference to Jesus. Okay, so the angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abizrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. As you probably know, normally you would thresh your wheat on what's called a threshing floor, which would be an open space so that as the farmer tossed the wheat in the air, the wind or the breeze would come by and blow the chaff away, and they would get the actual value of the grain. Instead, though, we're told that Gideon was threshing his wheat in a wine press, which meant that he was down inside of a stone pit somewhere. Gideon had to hide what he was doing so the Midianites wouldn't see him and take his wheat. And so here we see that Gideon's eyes are focused on the others, the Midianites. He was focused on his enemies. And as a result, he was fearful of them, and he was discouraged. Which makes the next verse kind of odd, because in verse 12 it says, when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said to Gideon, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Well, verse 11, as well as a lot of other verses in this story, tells us that Gideon was fearful, tells us he was discouraged. But here in verse 12, we're told that God referred to Gideon as a mighty warrior. And so what's all that about? Why would God do that? The reason the angel of the Lord referred to Gideon as a mighty warrior was not because that's what he was at that time, but because God could see who Gideon would soon become once he got his eyes off his enemies and on God and began to walk in faith. Folks, walking in faith has a way of changing who we are. God can see who we can become if we will just learn to walk by faith and not by sight. Verse 13, "But sir," Gideon replied. Understand at this point, Gideon don't know he's actually talking to God. So he says, but sir, and it goes on, he says, if the Lord is with us, why has all of this happened to us? Talking about the oppression from the Midianites. He goes on, he says, where are all God's wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt, but now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian? Here we see Gideon's eyes are now focused on his circumstances, and he's feeling hopeless and abandoned. How many of you have been there? I was just recently there. I just come out of probably a month of what I felt was being abandoned by God and hopelessness. Get focused on our circumstances. We lose hope. We feel like God has kind of left us out here to kind of survive on our own. Well, the Lord turned to him in verse 14 and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" Gideon responds in verse 15 by saying, "How can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." In other words, here's what Gideon's saying. He's saying, "How can I save Israel? I'm a nobody. I don't have anything to offer you, Lord." A moment ago, Gideon's eyes was focused on the others, his enemies. Then we turn here, now he's focused on his circumstances. Or he was on his circumstances. Now his eyes are focused on himself. And it causes him to see himself to be insufficient, therefore leaving him feeling somewhat discouraged and depressed. But verse 16 tells us that the Lord said to Gideon, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together." Now, I don't know if you caught this or not, but I personally find this pretty interesting. When Gideon's eyes was focused on the Midianites, God said to him in verse 12, "The Lord is with you." When Gideon's eyes was fixed on his circumstances, God said in verse 14, "Am I not sending you?" And when Gideon's eyes was fixed on himself, God said in verse 16, "I will be with you." Folks, God was trying to get Gideon's eyes focused on him. It was kind of like God was standing in heaven going, "Hey, Gideon, up here. Get your eyes off the Midianites. Look up here at me. Get your eyes off your circumstances and focus on me. Stop looking at yourself, Gideon, and get your eyes on me." I bet that you and I would be absolutely amazed at how many times God has stood up there in heaven trying to get our attention. And he's saying, "I'm up here. Quit looking at everything and everyone around you and look up here at me." Well, Gideon seems to finally get it. In verse 17, it says that Gideon replied, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me." Gideon's faith had gone from zero to a one. He has went from not having any faith at all to at least considering walking in faith. The following verses tells us that God did confirm through a sign that it was indeed him talking to Gideon. And now that God finally has Gideon's eyes aimed on him, God laid out his first assignment to Gideon in verses 25 through 26. And it says there, "That same night the Lord said to Gideon, 'Take the second bull from your father's herd, the one 7 years old. Tear down your father's altar to Baal and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. Then build a proper kind of altar to the Lord your God on the top of this height. Using the wood of the Asherah pole that you cut down, offer the second bull as a burnt offering.'" This was going to be Gideon's first step of faith in his walk of faith with God. God called him to tear down the local shrines of the false gods and replace them with an altar to the one true God. Gideon did it, but his knees were shaken. Look at verse 27. "So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord told him, but because he was afraid of his family and the men of the town, he did it at night rather than in the daytime." Folks, to Gideon's credit, he went from having no faith to at least having a weak faith. And that is usually how God works with us. He takes us along one step of faith at a time. Now, the big step of faith, will Gideon have faith in God to use him to deliver Israel from those Midianite bullies? verse 36. Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand as you have promised. And then Gideon, still walking in that weak faith, goes on to ask God for two more signs to prove that he was indeed calling him to go and deliver Israel. We've all been there. How many times has God called us to do something, but we hesitate because God's promises just isn't enough? How many times has God called us to do something and we aren't real sure about it? And so we seek some sort of confirmation from God. Well, God gives Gideon confirmation, but now God is about to take Gideon's faith to a new level. Chapter 7, verses 1 through 7. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men for me to deliver Midian into your hands. In order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her, announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. Gideon starts out with 32,000 soldiers. God said he had too many. So he downsizes Gideon's troops to 10,000. Realistically speaking, that just don't make a lot of sense. But God isn't done yet. Let's look at verses 4 through 7. But the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them for you there. If I say, this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, separate those who lap the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink. Verse 6. 300 men lapped with their hands to their mouths. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. And the Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place. Gideon's army began with 32,000 soldiers. God downsized that to 10,000. And then he shrunk it on down to a mere 300 men. If that's not bad enough, the enemy that they was going to be battling, the Midianites, had 135,000 soldiers. Guys, things are not looking too good for Gideon here and his 300 men. If you do the math on this, it comes out that the Midianites would have 450 soldiers to every one of Gideon's soldiers. So what's God thinking here? Why in the world would God do that? I mean, when Gideon had 32,000 soldiers, they were still outnumbered 4-1. But God dramatically decreases the odds by making it 450-1. Folks, God does not look for big, powerful, mighty Christians that have great faith to do His work. Instead, He looks for people that are weak and insufficient so that He can show off His power and His wisdom. He looks for those with imperfections so He can show off His perfections. He will use defeated people to produce victory. He does not look for people with great faith in God. He looks for people that has faith in a great God. Here's the deal. When God calls us to walk by faith, He will call us to do so in such a way that at the end of the day, the only explanation is God. When God calls us to do something by faith, He doesn't care if we get blessed by it. That's fine with Him, as long as He gets all the glory. His goal was to get our eyes off our circumstances, get our eyes off others, get our eyes off ourselves, and get our eyes on Him. Needless to say, Gideon was shaken in his sandals by now, and so we're told in verses 7 through 9 that during the night, the Lord said to Gideon, "Get up, go down against the camp, because I am going to give it into your hands. If you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah, and listen to what they're saying. Afterward, you will be encouraged to attack the camp." It goes on and it says that Gideon went down outside the enemy's camp. He overheard a soldier telling his buddy about a dream he had had. And in verse 14, the buddy interprets the dream, and here's what Gideon heard. "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands." Verse 15, when Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, it says he worshiped God. Do you know how to tell when your faith has finally reached a level of maturity? When you can worship God before the outcome. He goes on to say, Gideon returned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up! The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands." Did you notice Gideon said that in the past tense? The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands. They hadn't even confronted them yet. Gideon's already claiming victory. Do you know how to tell when your faith has finally reached a point of maturity? When you can see the victory before it happens. When you can see the victory before it happens. Verses 16 through 18. Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of them all with torches inside. "Watch me," he told them. "Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon." Think back to the beginning of this story. We had a man named Gideon that had zero faith. He was alone, he was hopeless, he was discouraged, he was hiding in a wine press from the enemy so they wouldn't see him. But as his faith grew, as he came to believe in God's promises, he is now just right outside the enemy's camp, filled with courage and confidence. Folks, confidence in the Lord can do wonders with our attitude. In addition to that, here Gideon is facing the odds of 300 men versus 135,000 enemy. And he doesn't even hand any weapons to his own men. Instead, he gives them a trumpet, a torch, and a glass jar. I don't know about you folks, that don't work for me. Each one of those items had a purpose in this story, but there is no weapons being handed out, and there's 450 enemy per one of them. Why is that? Real simple. They were trusting in God to give them the victory, not the weapons. Something else missing here in their battle plan is an exit plan. Gideon does not give them an exit plan just in case things don't work out for them. Instead, he gave them a trumpet, a torch, and a glass jar. But he didn't give them a plan B in case things turn ugly for them. Why? Because they was trusting in God for their victory. As the story goes on, we're told that they did just what Gideon had told them to do. And in verses 21 and 22, we see the results. It says, "While each man," Gideon's men, "held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. When the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords." When they sounded the trumpets, the Midianites jump up out of their sleep. In their confusion of what's going on and in the darkness of the night, they unknowingly begin to attack each other. And chapter 8, verse 10 tells us that in all of their confusion, 120,000 of them killed each other, leaving 15,000, and it says they took off running. Folks, according to Romans 8:37, walking in faith can make us more than conquerors, even when the odds are against us. Chapter 7, verse 23 tells us that Gideon and his men pursued the 15,000 fleeing Midianites. Folks, Gideon was not given up until the task God gave him was complete. Look at chapter 8, verse 4. Gideon and his 300 men, exhausted, yet keeping up the pursuit, came to the Jordan and crossed it. Again, at the beginning of our story, Gideon was seen being afraid of his enemies, questioning God's concern, questioning God's involvement, and doubting his own personal abilities. But by the end of our story, Gideon is filled with so much courage and driven by so much confidence in the Lord that he can't quit what God called him to do. Earlier, Gideon needed God to give him signs of confirmation because he doubted God's promises. But here he is walking in unwavering faith that God can and will do what he promises. In the beginning, Gideon was already defeated in his head. But once he got faith in his heart, he could not be defeated. Gideon's faith had become so visible that in chapter 8, verse 22, it says that the Israelites said to Gideon, "Rule over us, you and your son and your grandson, because you have saved us out of the hand of Midian." Let me ask you, where are our eyes focused? Are you feeling hopeless, discouraged? Then your eyes are focused on your circumstances instead of on the Lord. Are you feeling irritated or bothered or intimidated by other people? Then your eyes are focused on others instead of on Jesus. Do you feel like a nobody? Do you feel useless and inadequate? Then your eyes are focused on yourself and not on the Lord. Are you more like the Gideon we met back here in chapter 6, or more like the Gideon we see in chapter 7 and 8? The difference is determined by where our eyes are focused and who our faith is in. Fear, anxiety, hopelessness, discouragement, feelings of inadequacy, insufficiency, feeling like a nobody, feeling defeated. We've all been there. They are all enemies that are bigger than we are. And so we will need God to lead us to be victorious over those things. And if we will seek God through prayer, if we will seek God in His Word, if we will seek advice from other godly Christians, God will show us how to be more than conquerors. But it will require us to walk by faith down a path I guarantee you we least expect. God's plans for victory usually will not make any sense whatsoever, which is why it is called walking by faith. Henry Blackaby once said, "Faith means trusting God regardless of your circumstances. Faith means looking beyond the current situation and believing God will keep His promises." As we get ready to sing the final song, I want to just close with this. The first act of victory comes when a person places their faith in Jesus to save them. And all of you that have walked that path know that that path really don't make a lot of sense in the beginning. That's why it's called placing your faith in Jesus. It may not make sense today, but as you do that, it will make sense in time. And so let me ask you, have you ever placed your faith in Jesus to save you from something you can't save yourself from, called sin and the penalty of sin? You can do that today. And there's promises throughout Scripture that if you will place your faith in Jesus, He will guarantee you eternal life. And you can come up here and we can talk about it. We can pray together. We can talk after the service. But it's guaranteed salvation if you put your faith in Jesus.